All right, the recording has started.
Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. Colonel Tim Meerstein, I'd like to call the meeting to order at this time. Sure, if you would please read the roll call.
Okay, on the telephone, myself, Sherry Schaefer, Mr. Pete Rogel, Mr. Dave Patterson, Assistant Chief Alex Boyd, Chief Michael Curl. Is there anyone else on the phone whose name I have not called at this time?
Zach from Motorola, Zach Hass.
Thank you. Present Anchorage, I have Mr. Paul Fussy and Colonel Timothy Meerstein. Is there anybody else present in Anchorage?
Yes, Sherry. We can go around the table. John Rockwell.
Brian Barlow.
Nick Fanisok.
Scott Stromo.
Tim Woodall.
Chris Jensen.
David Reed.
Joe Pixa.
That'll be all.
Okay, and that completes the roll call.
Excellent. Are there any opening statements and other announcements? All right, well, I just want to thank everyone for gathering today in this quarter and happy to see that that spring is finally starting to show up. So exciting times are coming across. So moving on, we'll go ahead and start with the approval process for the previous meeting minutes. Has everyone had a chance to review the January minutes, and do you have any requested changes at this time? No one here in Anchorage. Is there anybody that has any recommended changes out on Teams? Okay, hearing none, would any other council members please offer a motion and a second to approve the January meeting minutes?
Put forward a motion to approve the meeting minutes from the January meeting as written and submitted. Brian Barlow for the record, sorry.
Okay,
Alex
and
Boyd.
Myself.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
This is Alex Boyd. I was going to second for you.
Thank you. Are there any objections or further discussion? Okay, hearing none, the motion is passed. At this time, let's move on to the old business items. Scott, do you have any updates on the Quantar replacement?
They just started doing some antenna remediation. So they've got 30 sites that they're going back to either change out brackets or change some antennas that were damaged over the winter. We just got started on that. We are being impacted by that light stuff that you guys were talking about before we started. There are still sites we can't even drive into yet. So other than that, we will be moving into the next phase of that project here this summer by getting some Juniper routers installed on the core systems in May, followed by hopefully Smart Connect installed in June, and that is pending FedRAMP approval. And if that occurs, that's what starts allowing us to try some of that other stuff like the Apex Next radio that can work through Wi-Fi or work through the LTE system to be able to roam onto and communicate with radios on ALMR. And there's interest in both state, local, and DOD and in that technology. So we're hoping that that comes through pretty soon for us. And then following that, the TDMA implementation will start occurring on the state sites over the summer and the DOD sites in June and July is what I understood from their update meeting today. They won't get them all done at the moment because of supply chain shortages for Juniper routers. So they're gonna, I believe they have got 50 of them for the moment for the state project. So they will be able to get through 50 sites and hopefully get some more. But if not, we'll probably be on pause after they get through the summer with those. Any questions? That's all I have for that.
The only clarification that I would make to that is that the system will be TVMA capable, but the FCC license and the NTIA license is to operate, and the TDMA emission standard and power is not there yet. So we'll be working on getting a license to match the capability.
Well, if I might add, thank you very much, Chair. Regarding the TDMA, we have set a date that we'd like to have TDMA only radios on the system. But between now and then, we'll be having a mixture of the two. And we feel that that will allow the different departments to have time to budget and procure. The message, though, we need to keep pushing is that, you know, the date's going to come up that non-TDMA or MDA radios will no longer be on the system after, and I need to make sure they've got the date correct. Is it,
26.
December of 26.
26, yes, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Any other comments? Okay, moving on to the State Interoperability Governing Board. This item has been tabled until the draft governor's report is ready for review, so we can go ahead and move on to the next item, which is the long-term cost-share solution. John, do you have any updates?
No updates at this time, sir. We are also waiting for the governor's report to be finalized so we can then move into the governance phase of NextGen 911. We're hoping that we can wrap the SIGFI into that at that time, as well as some long-term cost direction, but things are up in the air.
Okay, thank you. The next item is fiduciary responsibilities. Mr. Tim Woodall, do you have anything to add to this?
Yeah, we've been receiving data from the stakeholders that identify responsibilities and points of contact that is required to form the makeup of the intergovernmental service agreement. We also met with the state, asking the state its preference long-term with regard to contracting and funding payments, and it is recommended from the state that the DOD execute a standalone contract that mirrors the state's awarded contract in form of terms and conditions. So the DOD will be working with its contracting offices to execute a contract that would take all the terms and conditions of the state's awarded contract, execute a contract by which the DOD would then be able to follow its norms in paying invoices and all of the other activities associated with DOD contracts, such as getting contractors onto the installation. Typically, for contractors to come onto the installation, they have to have a contract in place that the contracting officer on the installation validates. So when the state of Alaska owns the contract, the DOD contracting office can't validate that. So getting contractors in the debid system that DOD uses to clear people on and off the installations is complicated. So it will take care of that. It will also allow us to comply with federal regulations that require us to do electronic funds transfers for invoices related to services contracts, which is handled through DFAS, the Defense Finance and Accounting Services out of Cleveland. So it will, again, it will return DOD to its norms. We think that'll ease the process for the state by which the state won't have to any longer get a federal receipt authority for the funds they receive from the state. So it takes the legislature section out of that portion of the payment process, and eliminates the state having to, in some cases, pay for services rendered in support of DOD requirements ahead of receiving funds from DOD, which may or may not be legal. So we hope that that would clean all of that up. So we're working toward, and as everyone understands, things move slow. There's a lot of wheels turning, but we may not get it in place before the new contract year starts in July this year, July 1. And I think that's contract year 6. Is that right? 6 of 8?
It's the option year of 6, the right option. So.
Right. So it's year 6 of 8. So in addition to year 6 of 8, we would also recommend that the if a discussion we'll have in having internally that we'll probably, I don't want to step on Scott's toes here, but we believe that the state should begin its process for execution of the next contract, which is only 2 years out, which would, understanding DOD after that contract award would have to go through its process of awarding a contract based on the terms and conditions of the state's awarded contract. I think the fiduciary agreement should lay out the timelines for that type of execution. So we're coordinating to make sure we have those right dates established and that everyone's following that. That's the latest update I have. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to, or Scott as well would be happy to address that.
Mr. Ruckland.
Thank you, Chair. Just to highlight Pam's effort, Pam has been very diligent working with the state to try to maneuver through the MOA process to get this all together. And I congratulate Pam and just wanted to point out in this meeting here what a great job Pam has been doing to push us in this right direction, because anything difficult, especially when it comes to the bureaucracy of funding and all that kind of stuff, we tend to drag our feet. Pam won't let us do that. So. Thank you, Tim, for your level of effort on
Thank you for your support.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Any other discussion items on the table? Anything on Teams? Anyone have anything to add? Okay, hearing none, Mr. Paul Fussy, would you please provide an update on the OMO, SMO fiscal year 23 budget?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So for the group, the budget was sent to the Executive Council on January 18th, and the final vote of approval was received on February 6th. This action is now completed.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you very much for the update. I appreciate it. Now, having completed the old business, John, would you please update us on the User Council?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. So as far as the User Council details, we would like to make a motion to approve the appointment of Lieutenant Benjamin Andres as the State of Alaska Department of Public Safety alternate to User Council representative. And then on the agenda, there's a second motion that we'd like to withdraw at this time. I understand that they actually have a, I'm not sure if the right term, but a higher level person that they would like to have on the User Council. Instead of the staff sergeant. And so the User Council would like to make a motion to approve the appointment of Lieutenant Benjamin Andres.
Okay.
Anybody want to know anything about Ben? I don't know if it's appropriate. I'm going to say, yeah, let's go. But appropriate for me to forward the motion, I can. Lieutenant Andres is a longtime member of the DPS. He came to us with more than 20 years of experience in law enforcement from another agency in Illinois and began a career with us, I believe, about 20 years ago. So he's been in law enforcement for a number of years. He has search and rescue experience. He's now in attempting to fill Paul's shoes there. He is a quiet, competent professional, and I think that he'll be a great alternate addition to the council. So, but unless we're really wrapped around the axle on the rules around here, I would forward a motion, or I am forwarding a motion to approve the appointment of Lieutenant Benjamin Endres as the DPS alternate user council representative.
And I'd like to second the motion as well. So,
thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for bringing it up, and it's tremendous to hear such a, you know, an outstanding American be a part of the user council. So,
yeah.
Awesome.
Yes.
Excellent.
And then Sherry, do we have to do an official vote or?
No, we do not. Just the motion and second. And the second, was that you, Colonel Mierstein?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Just referring me to the user council update, one of the discussions that I'd like to maybe open it up a little bit further is the Critical Connect and the move to our next-gen software. We've already heard a little bit about the move to upgrade the infrastructure, upgrade the routers, make sure that we have TDMA-capable equipment. We're also looking to reach out to the supplementing of the radios, and the Critical Connect software allows us to do that. And Scott, if I could put you on the spot to talk a little bit about what that does and then what the overall plan is, including what we're going to be doing in June and maybe how we're going to be utilizing it in a test environment in Nikiski.
So Smart Connect is the product that's Critical Connect. I mistakenly use that term a lot too. It's a completely different Motorola product, but it's Smart Connect that allows connectivity through essentially the internet through hopefully soon a FedRAMP approved government cloud that will allow certain radios to have an LTE SIM in it. So you can be anywhere on the AT&T network or the Verizon network at the moment. I think those are the two. And it's just like you're sitting on this system. So as long as that radio is programmed to work on the OMR, that it'll roam onto that. It will also use Wi-Fi if you can program in the Wi-Fi network into it. So in the example of like Nikiski, what we're interested in seeing how this will work is the troopers have been putting Sierra wireless routers into their vehicles that can create a Wi-Fi bubble around that vehicle. When they get out of the cars on a couple of the roads in Nikiski, it works fine in the vehicle. When they get out and use a portable, they're losing the communication. So this has a potential, depending on how big that Wi-Fi bubble is, to allow them to continue to talk on their portable through that Wi-Fi bubble back to the ALMR system. You know, it's limited to the range of whatever that Wi-Fi bubble is, but it may help at least for that situation where you're able to be close to a car. There are buildings or facilities that potentially could have trouble with in-building coverage that if there's a Wi-Fi network into that could be programmed into a radio. For example, a trooper post someplace maybe that doesn't have the best coverage indoor, and Nana's one as an example. And I know the DOD, I believe the Army is interested in it as well. I know some of the local government agencies are interested in it. I don't want to put Joe on the spot, but is anyone else in the country who uses this at the moment?
Yeah, the product's taken off. Houston was piloting, the city of Houston, Texas, is piloting the Apex Next program for several months with handfuls of radios, and then they moved over to a $5 million purchase, and they deployed those, and then they moved over to a $60 million purchase, and now they deployed across the entire city of Houston. That's the biggest example in the West. City of Des Moines, Iowa, there's handfuls all over the place. We're piloting this now at Washington State Patrol in Washington, Pierce County in Washington, and a couple of places in Oregon, handfuls in California. So along the lines of what Scott was talking about there as far as giving you coverage, where the AT&T with the Verizon footprint is outside of your ALMR network where it'll roam onto the LTE, you can use it in the in-building coverage as well. It's not everywhere. It's 20 SSIDs per radio. the SSID is an ID that makes you unique to that Wi-Fi box in that location. So if you're a state entity and you use the same SSID in 10 buildings, then that officer, wherever it goes in those buildings, would then have the coverage indoors. So it can augment coverage indoors, it can augment coverage in areas where you don't have land mobile radio today.
ICE and AFMC are both working on this on the federal side also.
ICE is the sponsor.
As far as the project plan, the next phase is June. I don't remember the date at this point. Let's just say mid-June, we're hoping to actually have the software installed, the connection into the network, and that's both inside and outside. And then shortly after that, we'll be able to do our first test. As I assume, we have how many APX, APX radios, Scott?
We have six.
Six. And so that will be the first test, and then the next test will be putting, you know, the software into some of the vehicle routers, as Scott has mentioned. The timing is perfect because, you know, AST is doing a lot of upgrades on the vehicles right now with the routers and as well as out in the rural locations with some of the newer technology like Starlink. And our plan is to have the same SSID as Joe mentioned for the Starlink network, as well as another, but the same for all the car routers as well.
All right. I think I heard somebody out on Teams try to fire up their mic. Okay, sir.
Just for the record, Brian Barlow here, and I guess there wasn't somebody on. I thought I heard that too. John, sorry if I missed it. You said software installation in the June timeframe. If you have a guesstimate, are we talking August then to try, or for first test, or July, or June 2nd? I don't know.
Optimistically, I'm hoping July.
Okay, July.
But I'm probably a little too optimistic.
No, I understand. I just trying to give an update to people. Yeah, I mean, that for the Nikiski issue, you know, they've been with GPS and dealing with that for years. You'll probably get a stack of Christmas cards if that works even halfway.
July,
maybe August.
Yeah.
The federal approval.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it's going to boil down to. I think we'll be ready in June.
Okay.
Everything's here. We've got everything set up. I talked to our PM about it. Mid-June, he's ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
But with no bed ramp, we can't do it.
Okay.
And unfortunately, we've been hearing that we're going to have that approval for a very long time.
Okay.
It's not, at this point, not stopping any installation. The intent is that it's going to get installed. It's going to get, you know, ensure the connectivity works. But it might get turned right back off.
But it doesn't have to impact the use, the implementation.
Right. We wouldn't be able to use it yet. So we didn't want to delay the installation. And the FedRAMP approval is supposed to happen. I mean, it's past the hard parts. It's just sounds like...
Right. Back in January, I signed off on their package for it, which moved it up to the federal level, where the federal AO and his office have to take a look at it and give it approval or not. And we're waiting on that.
All right.
It's in
process.
Yes.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. That's all I have for the user upgrade update. If there's any questions.
Thanks, Mr. Rockwell. Any questions or further discussion items? Okay, hearing none. Mr. Paul Fussy, would you mind providing the Operations Management Office update?
I'd be happy to. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So good afternoon, everybody. For the record, my name is Paul Fussy, Operations Manager. So we started out with training and outreach. I've worked with Mr. Nelson, and since our last meeting, we have two new video vignettes that were put out in February. Overview for new users and using the interoperability zones. Also, we did a quarterly live training on interoperability essentials, That class and that town hall was recorded. That is on the ALMR website. If you go into the training tab on the website. Also, for completed ATP, the OMO and SMO, we completed the ATP for JBC Kenwood BM 5000 mobile. It did pass the ATP and was approved. It's been added to the ALMR radio list on January 19th. And if you go onto the website under approved equipment, it is listed on there. And we've already seen some requests to have those radios put on the ALMR system. So that our entities have already purchased those radios and put them on the system. On the IWCE, or the International Wireless Communications Expo, several individuals, myself included, went down there. Very informative. So myself and the APSDS folks traveled down there, sat through the first 2 days were seminars, mostly sitting through the P25 security and interoperability seminars. And the nice thing about that is you're talking to individuals from all over the U.S. that are doing land mobile radio, looking at new equipment, new security issues, seeing any problems that they've had as you're sitting through there. So you're not reinventing the wheel on that one. Also, spent 2 days walking around talking to vendors. The convention center, the one whole wing was full just with vendors there for different radios, and talked to different vendors on different radios, antennas, equipment shelters. As we all know, a lot of the sites, we do need a housing in there for all of our equipment. Looking at what's out there now, helicopter transportable ones, different connectivity through there, new routers, equipment, and also generator vendors. So it was very productive 4 days down there, very fast paced, but a lot of good information on there. Any questions from the group here at the table or on Teams before I continue? And Mr. Stormo, did I miss anything on that one, sir?
No, the only thing I would add to, you know, whether it's IWC or APCO or I think IACP is maybe the other one, but if you're, especially if you're an infrastructure owner or if you're responsible for, you know, public safety communications sites, systems, equipment, these conferences are a very good opportunity to go see a whole bunch of stuff rather than trying to figure stuff out yourself, because you get lots of sessions and, of course, you know, most people are telling their good news stories about how things have gone for them. The opportunities to talk to vendors on the floor, and we've found solutions to problems we didn't even know had solutions to just by going onto the floor. So it's very beneficial, and, you know, and unfortunately in Alaska, it's not a very big vendor pool up here, so there's not a lot of people to talk to if you don't get out of state to conferences like this. You won't really get the opportunity to be exposed to that type of information. So I would encourage anyone who's involved in this business to try to get to one or two of those conferences.
Mr. Stormo, is there a venue for us to share the conferences that are coming up, information sharing? Does it happen at the user council, or is it posted to our ALMR website, or is there other means by which we share the conferences?
I can, thank you, Mr. Chair. What I can do is work with Sherry, and we can put out the list that's coming up, because APCO is going to be coming up in August. That's going to be in Tennessee. IWC, usually in Vegas, but it does change around a little bit. But I can get that list for you, Mr. Chair, and we can set that up for you.
That'd be great, not just for us, but I'm just thinking about the, you know, the small municipalities, this, folks that aren't represented here in the user council and the executive council, just if they have an opportunity and a desire to attend, just looking at information sharing. And then obviously from a DOD perspective, we would certainly welcome that and then share that across the our joint services. So.
I'll take care of that, Mr. Chair.
Sir, I would note that early on in the beginning of ALMR, when we had project teams with the state and the DOD, IWCE and APCO meetings were a must. Especially APCO was very helpful in getting our governance established, helping us work through the issues on spectrum sharing. They supported us both legally and in presence when we went to Washington, D.C. to talk to the NTIA and the FCC directly. So very good organizations. And as Scott said, the IWCE has very, very good and pointed meetings where you get to talk to experts and you can talk about your problems, you can get solutions, you can tell somebody about something and they'll go away and they'll give you a call back. So we found it very helpful from the program project perspective when building a system of this size, because a lot of those folks had built statewide systems before. We were doing it first because we were doing a shared infrastructure, but the fact that they had this expertise was very good. So we attended all of those through all of the project, which lasted some 6 years. So every year for 6 years, we went to those meetings. Very viable, I would add that.
Thank you, sir.
And I concur. A lot of good information. You're talking to the engineers that are not just the salesperson, the engineers, people who built it, looking at the actual shelter buildings, looking at the actual towers, actual generators, talking to them, you can see what they are, get us specs right there. So it's very informative, very helpful. Anything further before I move on, Mr. Chair?
Please proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So also, we looked at removing old subscribers. Like I mentioned earlier, we're getting more and more requests now to add radios to the system where entities, borough, city, municipality are buying TDMA-capable radios. The other part of that is we're adding new radios to the system, but the old radios, if they're not using them, we've been instructing them and talking to them, please let us know which ones you want removed. Put in a subscriber request to remove those. So when we start looking at audit, we don't have tens of thousands of radios that are no longer being used or still in the system that are not TDMA capable. So talking to during part of my outreach, talking about TDMA, but also once you're getting new radios in, getting them onto the system, putting in the subscriber request to have those older radios removed from the system, just to clean up the clutter. Also, when it comes time to do an audit, if you're not using those radios or you've gotten rid of those radios, we need to have those removed from the system. So that's been part of my outreaches, part of the education on there. Any questions on removing older radios from the system?
I would recommend that the executive council maybe task the user council to, since there are a lot of XTX 5000 radios on, I think it would be good for the user council to track that in terms of who has XTX 5000, who has the APX radios, and who has TDMA capable, and maybe the members can report that, and we can provide, so we can track where we are along the way, because there are a large number of radios, XTX 5000 radios on the system that people are using as primary radios. And those radios, if we're talking about 26 having to be swapped out, you're 2.5 years away from multi-million dollar expenditures to replace those radios. So I think it needs to be highlighted, it needs to be tracked. And if agencies aren't moving that way, maybe the executive council or the user council pushing them in that direction would be warranted. Otherwise, that's a very large rope to jump over, getting everyone there. I think if we're not tracking it and tracking it purposefully, I don't think we'll get there. So that's my recommendation.
And just another thing to add to that, if people waited till that last year with the lead time that it takes to get a radio right now, there's no chance, you know, that we could change out thousands of radios if you ordered them, you know, at the 1 year point, because they probably won't show up till the 9-10 month point, something.
All right, Mr. Rockwell.
Thank you very much, Chair. Even though I gentlemen, you're singing to the choir as far as the need to track the radios. We have highlighted this topic every single user committee meeting. And speaking with some of the representatives from like the Municipality South, they don't feel that they have the ability to reach out to their user community, whether it's north, south, you know, or what have you. And so if we put a request for these individuals to, you need to track the radios, I need a spreadsheet, I don't believe it's going to happen unless we assist with some type of project. And so the request, even though I, again, you're singing to the choir, you know, that we need to do this, we need to do something, the simple request of asking the user council to track the radios, I don't believe is going to get us there.
Well, I think the agencies are required to do report their inventories. When they report their inventories, I think it's something as simple as having them delineate between the number of XTX 5000, the number of APX 6000s or APX models that they have, and whether they are or are not TDMA capable. They're doing the counts, they're validating the counts as part of the membership agreement. So I think having them add that one step is, and I think, Nick, correct me if I'm wrong here, but should we not be able to see within the system the type radios that are operating on it in terms of XTX or APX?
Yeah, based on sister number.
Right. I think we can come with data from both sides and with a working group on the user council probably quickly devise a process. It may not be 100% accurate, but it would allow us to track progress and then to push where we don't see progress being made. Otherwise, I think we end up in 26 having to extend moving to TDMA because we'll have too many users that are still FDMA, have not gotten the money or have not received the radios, and you'll constantly be moving that because we're not placing the emphasis, and it's very difficult to enforce if you don't know where you're at. That's my input here. I'm not a voting member. I'm just putting that out as a process I think we should highlight.
So remind me, please, is the TDMA transition goal a hard fast that if those devices that are not TDMA compatible get knocked off the network, or they continue to operate on the network? So back to Mr. Waddell, to your point, if there's a directive for the boroughs, municipalities, users to track what types of devices they have, then what's the end state? Because other than just simply being informative, what is the follow-on from that? Is it to just ask a user to say, hey, by the way, you're using this FDMA device versus a TDMA device, you're right, disrupting the effectiveness of the network? I don't know how far that's going to... I'm trying to understand.
No, I agree. I think if you have an FDMA radio and you're in a net, you're in a talk group, and you key that radio up, everyone else is at the FDMA
right.
level.
Yes.
You eliminate the TDMA, the gains you get from a TDMA operation.
Right.
And I thought that the date was hard. I think the way it's written, it says, if you're not by this date, you are off the system is what. I'll get the text. I've read it.
That was a very pointed discussion. And I have to get the text again. But I was very adamant about we're not kicking anybody off the system.
Yeah, I'm not sure that the wording that is out there now that addresses TDMA and that date gives that leeway. So we may at the user council have to address that as not being a hard date. And then that begs, if you don't have a hard date, then how do you get everybody there? rather than keeping the executive council rolled up in this, just something to think about. That is a very expensive endeavor. Subscriber units are more expensive than the life cycle upgrades that we have. We're talking $20-25 million for some people, some agencies that have 10, 15, 20,000 radios. So the cost is significant. The ability to get that money, they should be doing in stages. If they're not already there, you're probably looking at 2030 or later. So I think in order to set a date and to enforce a date and to encourage people, we have to track that, and we have to be as accurate as we can. I understand we may not be able to be 100%, but it's hard to get to a goal if you don't know what's in front of you. So that's my recommendation.
And I think there's some messaging that can, whether it's coming from OMO or somewhere, because I think we can pull some reports out of Genesis to help with this. You know, I think telling some of the stories about, we got people that show up with a broken radio, and it's like, it's not fixable. You're going to have a radio for 10 months until your replacement shows up, because that's those. The only reason we haven't had those stories is because we had some radios that we bought for stock to be able to give out when that situation has happened. We're almost out of those radios. So.
Yeah, the XTX radio is at end of life. It's no longer supportable by Motorola. You cannot get it repaired.
Nor are we allowing any FDMA radios after that date be put on the system?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, as of January 1st, 2021, was the cutoff for FDMA
radios.
Education, then. Education on the realities of, expensive to transition, but operationally it's pretty difficult when your radio cannot be repaired.
Right.
So would we agree then, as a part of messaging, as a first step, if nothing else, then to pass a motion as part of the inventory process for entities to stipulate the type of radio that they have? So then for tracking purposes, we can, in the user council and in the executive council, get an idea of where we're at for the transition? Is that what we're looking for?
Yes, sir. I think that's a good start.
Is there any dissension or anything to add to clarify?
The inventory process doesn't exist as it did in the past, but we removed that requirement and made it.
Well, it's in the user agreement now. So they're putting their quantity of radios into the user agreement. So we can have them in the user agreement define their XTX 5000, APX 6000, and TDMA capable radios.
And I think we might be able to make that spreadsheet have that information already when we give it out, or come fairly close with information we can get out of the system. So
have them validated for us.
Right.
Yeah. Through the chair, Nick, I know when you pull the list of the radios on the system, obviously at 320. That's going to be XTS 5000. They all start with 320 for that serial number. How easy would it be to pull a list of how many XTS 5000s are on the system?
Sam, I can. I have some Excels that do that already between XTS, XTL, APX, the individual APXs, and a few other oddities like EF Johnson, Bendix King.
Yeah.
But there's still a good chunk of unknowns.
Right.
Is there any way for us to know whether APX 6000 radios, they bought up TDMA or FDMA, and then they were going to upgrade them to TDMA? Is there any way that we know that has been done, or?
There are.
I think there's some gray area here.
Some ways, yes, but they might not be very easy ways. There's certain things within the system and Genesis that can kind of provide some of that information, but it may limit it down to having to check every single radio.
Mm.
So maybe as a starting point, you could provide a framework by which the users then can validate or then go back and see whether their APX 6000s are FDMA or TDMA, upgraded because of the firmware upgrade.
So
being said, and for the sake of time, I think we're in agreement for tracking that this is a good idea. So I would like to introduce to the floor a motion for us to create an inventory that delineates the different varieties of radios and disseminate that across the users for validation and in time for the next executive council meeting, which would be in August. Anyone second the motion?
So, Brian Bartle, I'll second the motion.
Sure. Is that clear? Any questions or clarification on the motion?
No, I have the recording on, so I'll be able to pull it all off of there, but I've got most of it, yes.
Thank you, ma'am. And team, thanks for the that discussion. I think it was worthwhile, very much worthwhile. So very good. Mr. Pusty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Continuing on for my last talking point are the March system metrics. So if we look at the screen, looking at the monthly group and individual calls, for the month of March, with 1.6 million calls. And look at our push-to-talks. We had 2.6 million push-to-talks on there, down just a little bit from last year at this time, but still a very robust and busy system going on. If you look at our monthly busies, there is a very large spike in March. So the busies went up to 1,567 compared to last year at 969. However, if you still look, we're at 0.0009%. So the top four sites, Pole Hill, Donnelly Dome, Birch Hill, we started looking at it, and we discussed this in the user council also. Why was there such a large spike of busies? And this was open source. So there was a military exercise that accounted for the majority of those busies. There was an additional 8,000 soldiers and more than 500 military vehicles that took part in that exercise that accounted for that. So you're looking at 8,000 additional personnel, 500 additional vehicles on the system. Yes, there was 1,576 busies, but way, way below even 1%. And then for the monthly systems, sites below 3.9, there were 9 sites. And if we look at the reasons why here, you have some just a regular maintenance being done. There were some commercial circuit issues, which are beyond our control on that one. But if you look, most of it were just regular maintenance and then a few things out of our control. So that's what I have for the monthly matrix. Any questions on that? Hearing no questions, Mr. Chair, that completes my report.
Okay, very good update. I appreciate it, Mr. Fussy. Thank you. At this time, does anyone have any new business items they would like to offer up for the good of the group?
I do. I'm sorry to dominate here. I heard listening to the news that the Alaska Municipal League and perhaps NAPSU and some other agencies that or communities that belong to AML are perhaps leaving or have already left. In thinking of our governance document, which lists AML and not those agencies or those communities that have left the AML, it may be a suggestion that we validate that communities that have left AML, maybe an update to our cooperative agreement is required. Because we would, again, to make it effective, we would want it to be with the community that it would be involved in that governance. So I would recommend to the executive council that we maybe have the operations management office look into that, or somebody look into it to validate with those communities what's happening with AML, what communities are in, what communities are out, and then look at the cooperative agreement and recommend what changes we need to make with regard to that agreement.
Through the chair, Mr. Woodall. Yeah, I just happened to be on their site today doing a reference on there. Their next meeting isn't until December 6th through the 8th in Anchorage. So that's our next meeting. Their website hasn't been updated in quite a while. So I'll reach out to them. But, so that was my concern, too, going through the website on there. It's very stale for information-wise.
Yeah, I heard on the news this morning that there were that Matsu had withdrawn.
Yep.
And that there were some other communities that were considering withdrawal very soon. So I think there's a fallout within that AML government. So anyways, it does have an effect on our cooperative agreement, and I think we should probably be aware of it.
I'll look into that, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Chair, do I need to pass a motion to task OMO to explore potential to update the cooperative agreement given the changes in the AML?
No, sir. We'll just take it as an action.
Okay, thank you. Good update, Mr. Woodall. Actually, not an update, but recommendation. Any other new business items? None here. Over to teams. Anybody dialing in virtually have any new business items? Okay, nothing heard. Thank you very much, all. At this time, I'd like to accept a motion. I'll accept the motion and then a second from any one of the council members to adjourn the meeting.
Nobody wants to adjourn. I'll forward a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Alex Boyd, I'll second.
Gentlemen, thank you.